Welcome everyone, I'm Jared from Monsters of Multiclass, and today I'll be sitting down and talking with Lex Olden, creator, awesome person, and friend of the show, as we actually had Lex on our Sorcerer Remix episode a couple months ago. And we'll talk about all things D&D and have a good time doing it. So thank you, Lex, for coming on, and just want to start off and tell us, how long have you been playing D&D?
That's a good question. Let's see. I played Pathfinder, which, depending on who you ask, is just D&D.
Yeah, that's fair. I should have just generally said tabletops, because it doesn't need to be specific.
Yeah, my first thing I played was Pathfinder, and I think that was freshman year of college, so that's 2013, I think? So yeah, like, okay. 8 years? Yeah.
Okay. And you do some DMing as well, yeah?
I almost exclusively DM.
That's about what I thought.
It was about around quarantine is when I started playing regularly, because everyone's doing online stuff, and so right. I finally got the chance to be a player.
Yeah, it feels like that actually did kind of open things up a little bit. Myself, I've been DMing almost exclusively for the past couple of years, yeah. And you know, once quarantine hit, everybody's like, oh, I can run online games now. Let's go ahead and reach out to people. So that's been really nice.
Yeah, like, there's a bunch of people who are like, I know you have the time.
Right. So now that you've had a chance to do both here, do you still have that preference for DMing, or are you just kind of, like, locked into it?
I enjoy both for different reasons. Also depends on the system, I've realized.
Okay.
Like, when I'm playing 5th edition, I've realized I enjoy being a player a whole lot more. In Pathfinder, I want to be the DM. Screw being the player.
Okay. So let's go into that. For 5th edition, what makes you like being the player more?
So I've always... Whenever I'm playing, I'll have an idea. And in 5th edition, when I have an idea, there's not as many rules in the way of just doing whatever stupid thing came to mind. It's like, oh, there's a giant thing. Hey, DM, can I have my familiar, like, fly a bomb in its mouth?
Right.
I don't see why not.
So the lack of rules allows you to just kind of make stuff up, compared to Pathfinder, where there's so many rules. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, can I do that? It's like, actually, because of, you know, page 363, mm-hmm. Right here it says, no, the familiar can't hold more than 2.5 pounds. And
exactly.
I know exactly how much this bomb weighs, so you're shit out of luck.
Yeah, Pathfinder has a lot of stuff like that, which comes in handy when you're DMing and you're structuring monsters and stuff.
Right.
Because the more rules there are for monster creation, then it's just like, okay, I can make exactly what I want to make, and here's the rules how.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like when I DM, I prefer structure. When I'm a player, I prefer less structure.
No, I totally get that. And I find that interesting because my play style as a player is very much trying to go for the creative, and like, I don't really worry about the rules too much. And you know, if mm-hmm. anybody knows the show, I of course love rules very much. But as a player, it's like, you know, I don't want to be constrained by them. But it seems like when I usually DM, people try to stay within the rules. They don't really think of like these outside creative solutions. So I always love when I'm a player, because I get to like show people that of like, look at all these crazy things you can just try and do, and there's just enough rules there to allow for it.
Yeah. So the character I'm playing in the 1/5e campaign I'm in, like I said, finally get to play. So I'm playing a warlock, and he's using the Fathomless subclass, right?
Yeah, that one was neat.
It is super cool, but what I wanted to do was play a lightning-based warlock, and there's absolutely no way to do that.
Yeah.
But we realized, okay, so what we're going to do is just anytime it says cold in Fathomless, it's lightning now. Anytime it says swim, it's now flying, and so on and so forth. And now, rather than a water elemental, air elemental, done. That's my warlock.
Yeah.
And in, like I said, Pathfinder, doing that, don't do that. You can't do that.
It changes up too much.
Mm-hmm. Like, each damage type in Pathfinder has, like, it's so important, resistances and vulnerabilities in Pathfinder, that, like, messing with the stats of stuff is just a no-no. Don't do it.
That makes sense. Yeah, and that's one thing I've always been a little disappointed by 5th edition in. Like, the vulnerabilities and such, especially, is it seems like, besides fire resistance and poison resistance, which all, like, devils get, there's just not that much out there.
Yeah.
And, like, vulnerabilities, I mean, you can count the amount of vulnerabilities on, like, one hand.
And almost all vulnerabilities are fire.
Right.
It's usually like, oh, it's a sentient tree? Yeah, okay, it's vulnerable.
Yeah, okay, fire. I guess you can burn it. I guess that makes sense.
Like, that tracks. there's, in one adventure, it's like, oh, it's an animated scarecrow. Okay, I'm just going to take a wild guess that it's really flammable.
Yeah, and I do think that's something I'll always suggest to DMs when making their own homebrew monsters and such. Mm-hmm. Is like, just play around with the vulnerabilities and things like that. Like, see what you can throw in to actually make the fight feel a little more interesting.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was disappointed with in 5th edition dragons. Because, one, Pathfinder dragons are the wildest shit I have ever read in a tabletop. Their powers don't make any sense half the time.
Oh, wow.
Like, okay, so gold dragons, cool. They're fire dragons. They're cool dudes, usually. That makes sense. Fire dragons. That can track. Why do they have the best swimming speed in the game? Okay, sure. Fine. Oh, what is that ability? They can just take any gem and, like, here, it has wish on it now. Why?
Whoa. Yeah, that's pretty powerful.
Every dragon in that system has wild, strange abilities. And then also, monsters in that system get feats. And so each dragon has its own build in combat, which leads to the strangest stuff. Blue dragons are stealth-based.
Okay.
And they're crit-based.
Oh, no. So they're like the rogues, the rogue dragons.
Yeah, their major tactic is, like, turn invisible, invisible, or burrow, pop out, scare you, and then they crit on, like, a 15 to 20, and if they crit, you're blind. Like, that's their thing.
Wow.
And if it doesn't work, they just leave. It's like, plan failed. Bye. Because they're also illusionists, because why not?
Wow. I think you could definitely take something from that, though, because,
yeah. You
know, D&D dragons, they're their breath weapons, and then there are some claws and tails, and that's, like, generally it.
Big, colorful lizards that hit you sometimes. That's
right. So, yeah, I might be looking at Pathfinder dragons.
Oh, please do.
Take some broken bullshit from that.
The oldest dragons all have... There's some, like, capstone ability for every ancient dragon. Copper dragons have one of my favorite ones, because copper dragons are, like, the charismatic... I can't talk today. Charismatic ones that are basically bards. Their, like, ultimate ability is they can tell a joke so bad you die.
Wow.
They just once a day get power word die for free, but you're supposed to roleplay it as they tell a joke so bad you die.
Wow, I've been an ancient green dragon all along.
Silvers, I think it's when they hit zero, they just go, no, I'm going to keep fighting now. And then, like, they survive for another three turns. They keep fighting while dead and then keel over.
Only if they choose to, though, at that point.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess y'all win. Fine, I'm dead.
Okay, I'll let you have it. Okay.
So that's, I feel like, one of the good parts of playing in different systems, something that I wish I've actually had more experience with, is, you know, there's so many different philosophies around design and, you know, monster creation, especially, that I feel like if you just limit yourself to one system, you really are going to miss a lot of what you can just get creative with.
Yeah, I've been trying to play more and more systems. It's just that not enough people around me are willing to just jump in and out of stuff.
Yeah, and it can be tough, you know, because you want to play something, and usually that means somebody needs to run it, and to run it, you need to feel comfortable with the rules, and that's not something you can usually pick up in 30 minutes.
Yeah. I've been very interested in the World of Darkness games. I played Vampire once in college, and I thought, this system's rad, and then I just never got to play it again.
That's how I feel with the Eclipse Phase system, and that's like a not cyberpunk, really, but yeah, I'll say cyberpunk-ish, but sci-fi. And I played it like one or two times. The system was really cool. I've even like read up trying to run it myself, but it's just like never really gotten to the next steps. But I have been able to try a couple new things recently. Mothership, also Call of Cthulhu. Got to run that.
I have played Call of Cthulhu. I don't know what edition, because when I first started playing stuff, I didn't realize editions were a thing.
Right. You just sat around and played.
Yeah. But yeah, Call of Cthulhu, it's a fun system. I don't do horror often, but, like, spooky stuff. That's not usually me. But the system itself, cool.
Fair enough. So, all right, back to, I think, my original question of whether or not you preferred DMing.
Sorry, we went way off.
That's what this is for. Tangents are good. I'm not here to stop the tangents. I don't think we've ever actually talked about your DMing style and what type of games you put together. So in your own words, you know, what type of campaign do you like running?
First of all, I am always chasing that mythical 1-20 campaign.
Okay.
I nearly got that once. It was a 2.5 year long campaign. We made it from 1 to 19.
Oh, come on.
Leveled up to level 20, and we had like 3 sessions left max, and we just never finished.
No way.
Yeah.
You gotta do that. You have to, like, yeah. I don't care how long it's been. You need to call all those people up and say, finishing it, we're doing it.
Right? But yeah, it was 2.5 years in the making, and like, it just fell apart because of people were arguing with each, like, the friend group actually kind of fell apart.
Right. It was outside of the game aspects.
Which is so frustrating.
Yeah.
We were so close to done. And that was, like, my second campaign ever, too. So I was like, yeah, let's go.
I don't care how mad I was at people, after 2.5 years, just getting to level 20, I'd be like, yeah, we're finishing this. All
please,
right.
Please.
After this, I'm never talking to you again.
That's kind of where I was, and I wanted to finish it and then be done with them forever.
Right.
But, yeah.
It doesn't always work that way.
Yeah, it was... the plot was... basically, they were fighting, like, the embodiments of the 7 deadly sins.
Oh, that's cool.
It happened because I saw one single thing in Pathfinder where it's like, it was like a Sin Wizard. It was a subclass for Wizard called like the Sin Mage or something.
Okay.
And it was, yeah, you're hyper focused in one school of magic and you're powered by Sin. And each of the 7 deadly sins had a school of magic tied to it.
Okay.
And so I made 7 villains, each one focusing on one of the schools of magic. And part of it was they also were just, like, completely unable to use 2 other ones. So they were super... So each one had one school they focused on, but they were super vulnerable to 2 others.
So, like, the party had to figure that out and kind of... Yeah. Yeah, okay. That's really
cool. So, yeah, they beat everybody but Pride. Pride
that's
was...
rough.
I still have his, like, sheet and everything. Like, he would have been a fun fight. He was illusion-based, because you gotta make yourself look as good as you feel.
Right.
there was this wild spell. Some of the spells in Pathfinder, I really can't wait till they make it to 5th edition. It was, like, rather than casting an illusion, you turn yourself into an illusion so people can't interact with you.
What?
You go, look at me, I'm fake now.
Did you, like, have a real you somewhere, or was it just, like...
No, you become fake. And so, like, you, like, physical objects don't interact with you anymore, no one can cast on you, people can, like, perceive you and hear you, but if you choose to, you can't hear them or see them, because you're fake, who cares? And that was, like, it was, like, an 8th or 9th level spell. It's like, look at me, I'm fake now.
I'm... I'm so lost, and not in like that you didn't explain it well. It's just I feel like I could have so many questions just on
right?
that. Like, how do you do anything?
And the way I was playing Pride was he had that active 24/7.
Okay.
And so the way I had him do his villain monologues and stuff all the time was he'd show up, they'd try to stop, I was like, nah, I'm an illusion, bye.
Oh my god. That is really good, though, for a big, bad, evil guy, because, you know, there's you don't have that accidental, they counterspell the dimension door, and they can't leave the plane or whatever.
Right, he just goes, yeah, this wall, it's real, I'm not, I'm going to walk right through it.
Love it. So you're chasing that 1 to 20 campaign. Is it usually centered around, like, a big, bad, evil guy, as you've put them up, or have you had a couple
variations?
The
first one I did was, the first one I was like, that's how you do stories, right?
Right, for sure.
You just gotta be the same villains the whole way through. My current campaign, that's not true. My players haven't realized that yet, though. They're about to finish this group of bad guys, and they think there's gonna be more of them. It's gonna be new stuff. Yeah, the current villains in my current campaign, they're called the Arcana. I was like, okay, I like tarot's kind of cool as a theme, so I made a person for each tarot card.
Sure.
Yeah,
I love
it.
Hey, that inspiration comes from everywhere.
Yeah. And I introduced them slowly. I introduced a single one. It's like, yeah, he's a big bad. They beat him. They're like, oh, he's part of a group. Okay, cool. Wow. That's not been done in any story ever. This villain was just the tip of the iceberg? What?
That's always all right. Say I will say over and over that tropes are there. They're your friend. Yeah, yes, can be overused, but...
Tropes became tropes for a reason.
Exactly. It works.
Yeah. So yeah, they're dealing with the Arcana's, like, final ploy. Their whole thing is, in my setting, there are the current big pantheon, and then there's the old gods that used to be in charge, and they got shoved away, hidden, and forgotten. So the Arcana's whole thing is, yeah, that's super unfair. We're gonna bring the old gods back? Why should they be forgotten and not have any praise?
And that's good, because I feel like that opens up, depending on how they go about things, and I'm sure if they're the villains, it's been some nefarious things here and there.
Oh,
but
for sure.
I could very easily see them bringing PCs over to their side, potentially, or you know, at least making them doubt their stance as it is.
Yeah, it's that hasn't happened because, what was it, like 3 out of 4 of the party are hyper-religious.
Oh, okay.
So, like, one of them is literally, what is that subclass called? The Cleric Sorcerer. Divine Soul.
Yep.
He's the Divine Soul of, like, one of the major deities. And my phone just dinged and I forgot mute it. Silly me.
For anyone listening, this is going to be lower quality because Kevin's not editing it, and that guy cares about quality. This is Jared now. I don't give a damn.
Look at me. I am the editor now.
So yeah, you've got these 3 ultra-religious characters. So obviously, yeah. I think this setup is perfect for them because their deities are going to be like, hey, could you take care of this for us?
Exactly. Yeah, that's where we're at. A major god going, hey, all those little gods, they're individually not a problem, but all of them together, they're kind of a problem.
See, and I don't know if you have teased this in any capacity, but I feel like I would be trying to suss out as a player, like, what was the problem with the old gods? Why is it such a issue? Why is it that these new gods that are in power are threatened by them?
Yeah, the lore that they found is that the old gods just stopped doing their job.
Oh, okay.
Of taking care of creation, because Big Daddy God number 1 vanished, and they went, well, we don't know what to do now.
Right.
And so the current pantheon went, if you're not going to do your jobs, we're going to take your jobs.
Okay.
And okay. that's why the current gods are in power and all the older ones have been shoved into the worst jobs imaginable.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, no, that sounds really fun. Mm-hmm. And so you're saying that that is still going to be like the focus for the entire campaign?
No, that is just levels like 1 to 8.
Okay. That's some big stuff for a 1 to 8 campaign. Yeah. I feel like I usually wait until like tier 3 to bring in the god stock.
Well, the next thing was going to be like the aftermath of what happened with that, because the gods will still be upset that it happened in the first place.
Right.
None of my players are going to listen to this. I'm not going to tell them this exists.
There you go. Okay.
Spoilers, whatever. So after the minor gods are going to be defeated, I was going to have one of the major gods, the god of war, be like, okay, that happened, and I don't like it. I'm going on the war path. I'm starting a crusade.
Okay.
You see all those people that, like, are now praising those minor gods? Get them out of here.
Wipe them out. Done.
Wipe them
it.
Out. None. No one can remember these gods exist. We're starting clean.
And do any of your players, like, have a connection with this war god?
This campaign, no. I tried to run this once before, and the first time I tried to run this, someone was a zealot barbarian of this war god, and I was so excited to see how that went.
Yeah. Yeah, because I would say that could cause a major conflict of party as mm-hmm. one person's like, no, we need to wipe all of these people out. It's what the god has demanded. And
yeah.
Everybody else is like, well, we're not really in the wiping out business.
Yeah, that's not really our thing.
Right. but still, I mean, that's something interesting. First, you're helping the gods, and now you're kind of like, I don't know if we actually agree with the direction this has gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I wrote it, and then I went, okay, what could possibly happen next? Okay, cool. Oh, that sounds like a thing that would happen as a result of this. Okay, cool. And that's what all the steps were
yeah.
the story I wrote. And yeah, I started big, but also that's a great way to get them interested.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that's really all that matters. Say, I'm of like the total opposite mentality, which has definitely not worked out for every player I've had at the table, where I want to like start at a crawl, where it's just like
yeah.
nobody, you know, it's like are dealing with really minor stuff and just kind of like learning the world and, you know, growing with it. And I just keep things so extremely small and slow that I've definitely had people who are like, can we get to like the story? And I'm like, this is the story. What do you mean?
The start of it with the summon of the gods, I had it endanger a single town at first.
Uh-huh.
And so that was me starting small. It's like, yeah, there's this weird dude in the woods trying to summon something. Can you like save our town, please?
It's always gotta be saving the town. I mean, that's
yeah.
the most important part.
Yeah, the good old town of Briar's Bluff, which I didn't realize it for a very long time, but the story I wrote for that town is like 1-to-1 the plot of Cars.
What?
Because the plot of Cars 1 is their town used to be like a tourist attraction, and then it started falling apart when a new highway was built.
And that's the setup.
That was the setup for this town. And like, yeah, we're like on hard times. Like, bandits have taken advantage of us now that we can't do anything about it. And now there's someone out there like making zombies in the woods. Can you like...
Wow. That's actually pretty good though. Like for a D&D setup, I would take that. I might take that. I should watch Cars 1.
I explained that and one of my players went like, Cars? Wait, what?
All hitting them at once.
Does that make you guys Lightning McQueen? I don't like that. ka-chow.
So for I guess, do you hope that this one as well will get to level 20?
That would be the dream, but I'm also doing my best to write it incrementally, so if people just want to stop, I can.
Right.
You know?
Right.
if people want to end it at the level 8 mark when we beat the Arcana, then fine. I could run something else.
Yeah, that's always a tough decision. So it's it's also easy when you like start a campaign to get everybody on board with that idea.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, let's get to level 20. It's going to take us like 5 years to get there. And then everybody's a year in and they're like, I'm kind of getting bored of my character because I just want to kill stuff in a new way. Have you ever had like a drastic character change mid-campaign? Not Ooh. Even just like from death, but just from somebody getting bored?
I don't think I have, actually.
Okay.
I had one from a death, which was actually my first time I killed a player. And then everyone immediately loved the new character infinitely more.
Oh no.
Like the new character was the old character's dad.
Interesting.
So he's like, yeah. It became a running joke in the campaign that he'd introduce himself as like, hey, what up? My wife and child are dead. And that was like how he said hi. Okay.
Definitely makes an impression.
Right?
This dude's family is dead, and he's not afraid to talk about it.
Yeah, it's just getting out there so it doesn't get in the way of anything. Just open book.
Right. It's like, yes, I just, would you like to stay here for the night?
This is sure.
Yeah.
He was a cool subclass, if once again, it was Pathfinder, because weirdly enough, I'm now more known for making 5th edition stuff, but I played Pathfinder for way longer. But there was the class was like psychic historian, and that was the whole thing.
Huh.
Hey, all of their magic came from he'd get artifacts from places, and then he'd be able to channel the spirits of the previous owners.
Yeah, Pathfinder has some wild stuff.
It really does, and I want him in 5th edition, please. Please.
And it's crazy because we're now at the point that, as I understand, 5th edition is one of like the longest running single editions that's like ever been around. Like we're
from what I understand, yeah. And it's, in 3rd edition, I think it was around almost as long, but they just made stuff way faster with way less consideration of balance.
Right.
Let's just make a class. What is this thing, dude? I don't know. Let's call it the Cancer Mage. That's a real thing that exists somewhere.
What?
Yeah, I don't know what it does. I just know it's real. What was one? There's a prestige class called like the Swan something, and the prerequisites were you had to be a woman and you had to be a virgin, and the whole upside was you can turn into a swan at will. That was it.
Not really worth preserving your virginity for.
But you can be a swan, Jared. You can be a swan. Think of the benefits of being a swan.
I mean, can't you just be a swan with, like, 2 levels in druid?
Shh! Don't tell the swan people!
The entire swan society of female swan virgins who are just like, whoa, you're telling me we're doing this for nothing?
We could have just been druids all along.
Yeah, that sounds odd. And I do appreciate the, I guess, care that's being put into to new classes in 5th edition. I've heard a lot of discussion and, I guess, difficulty with the Tasha's release because a lot of things are more powerful than previous stuff. But like every time I see it, it's like, you know, oh, these feats are better than old feats. It's like, yeah, well, old feats sucked. You know, there was a lot. There were a lot that were just bad. So sure, this stuff is like just better by leaps and bounds. But if you look at the player's handbook, there's still stuff that's more powerful than what's coming out now.
Yeah, like I don't care what they make. Nothing will. People will never feel as upset about anything they make as people have been upset about Bear Totem Barbarian.
Right. Like if and that came out now, oh my god.
Right.
Look, it just has resistance to everything? Are you kidding me?
What the fuck? It's bullshit. Even though Paladin has the subclass that does, like, the same thing. It's bullshit.
And, you know, you could very well argue, as somebody who has struggled with a bear totem barbarian in their campaign before, it kind of is bullshit. And I still remember the one time I did, I like wanted to set up a story arc for each person's character, and for mm-hmm. theirs, since they were just steamrolling everything, I had his hometown or his home dwarf cave attacked by illithids, and so people were being,
what now? Right? Get well, fucked, kid.
What now is I actually killed him.
Oh no.
Because turns out getting around the psychic resistance was like insta death. And I basically, and I think with the illithids, you're like, they literally suck the brain out.
Yeah.
So I did this, I totally, you know, bullshitted my way through it, where I was like, if you get healing by the end of next round, or like break the grapple by the end of next round, then we'll say that like they couldn't complete the brain sucking, and you're just normal dead. You're normal dead, but you still have your brain and can be brought back. And
yeah.
Luckily, jeez. It was, like, right near the end of the fight and stuff. But I felt so bad, because I was like, this was supposed to be their, like, you know, overcoming stuff. And instead, yeah. it was just the hardest challenge they had. And I don't know. I feel like there's definitely better ways to do that. But there is something to be said about, like, your main arc being something that's, like, your biggest weakness. I mean, I do love, like, giving these story arcs for people, but I feel like there's probably something to be said about just giving them like the thing that they're the best at, you know. It's like, yeah. oh, it's a barbarian, so like throw 20 enemies at them that'll all die in just one hit. Just let them feel like the biggest badass.
Just let them go absolutely apeshit.
Right.
One of my players is playing this character has like 4 anime transformations built into their style. So they're a barbarian multi-classed blood hunter, right?
Okay.
So they're the beast the new beast barbarian with the lycan blood hunter. They're also a shifter. So oh, okay. they're like a quadruple werewolf.
Yeah. They don't even know what their normal form is anymore.
Right. So every turn, it's just bonus action, I get a new buff, let's go.
And those are fun, because you know, the longer the fight goes, the stronger mm-hmm. you get. You've actually got time to bring everything out.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter what the story is for this character, just all I gotta do is guarantee there's a fight that goes long enough
right.
that he gets to reach his final form.
Right.
Which he hasn't gotten to do yet. I think we're level 6 or 7. And he's gotten within a turn of doing it, but he hasn't made it there yet.
You have to have it where the villain, whoever it is, just continuously mocks them and just says, like,
right.
oh, you'll never be strong enough. There's no way you can amass enough power. And they're just like, this isn't even my final form. And, you know, get to power up and once again.
The fun part of the character is when she's not raging, she's like a kind of normal, chill person. And then it's, okay, cool, some werewolf stuff. It's just claws, it's fine. Oh, you're like twice your size and furry now. Okay, wait, why did your fur turn like stark white? Where did the small, like 5 foot nothing 20-year-old go?
That's awesome. That's a good amount of edge. Just the right amount of edge.
Edge.
So I know that you do some homebrew, and I don't think we've mentioned that just yet. So tell me about that. What got you into homebrewing in 5th edition specifically? Because I know you said most of your homebrewing is done in 5e. Yeah.
So since I've been playing tabletop, I immediately went, I want to do homebrew. And then I realized that in Pathfinder, that is so daunting. Because, like we've talked about, the rules are so, like, in stone.
Right.
That it's really scary to try and do it in Pathfinder.
Right. You move a dial and you don't realize that you just threw off the balance wildly.
Yeah. It's a giant machine with, like, 15,000 moving parts. So changing anything, it's like, oh, shit, what did I do? Oh, no.
Oh, shit. It's broke.
Yeah. But in 5th edition, it's really plain and easy for me to see when I'm making something. what the effect will be. Even though, of course, there's going to be, like, some unforeseen things every now and again.
Of course.
Yeah, that's going to... Like, no one's going to perfectly know every interaction in a system.
Well, I will.
Oh, but... yes, of course. I am so sorry. I forgot.
Not true at all, obviously. Yeah, and that's, you know, what playtesting's for and getting community feedback and everything.
Yeah. But yeah, so I started in 5th edition just because it is simpler. Not in, like, a bad way. It's just, like, it's easier to make something without destroying everything else.
Right.
And I also feel validated whenever I make something, because a lot of the time I'll have an idea, and then at some point a similar or the same idea will show up in Underneath Arcana. It's like, okay, so at least I'm having, like, ideas within the realm of the design of 5th edition.
Yeah. No, that is very validating, yeah. And it's been said multiple times before that Unearthed Arcana is not really about playtesting and everything and, like, getting community feedback in the sense of, like, how will this play out? And it's more of, like, are people interested in this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just trying to see from a marketing standpoint, whether or not it gets people excited.
Yeah, there was, like, in the new Tasha's, a bunch of the subclasses have things like, you get a number of uses equal to your proficiency modifier or something, which didn't exist before Tasha's.
Correct.
And then I thought, why don't they just use that? And so there's a couple of subclasses I made that do, and then when Tasha's rolled around, I'm like, yes! Thank you!
And I'm sure if you released those things prior to Tasha's or any of that UA even came out, people would be saying, like, oh, proficiency bonus, you can't tie stuff to that, it'll break with multiclassing.
Exactly, yeah. I did have a couple people saying that for some of them, but, like, just say it. I had an idea and it works.
Right, right.
Yes.
Good. Scroll back through your past messages and just send them. Told you so. that's great, and I really have liked the proficiency bonus tie-in. I feel like that's a good way just to. Well, it's just been great. I don't know, all the stuff in Tasha's. Yeah. Well, not all the stuff in Tasha's, but, you know, I've got my opinions on the sorcerer, but...
Oh, I don't remember what sorcerer they added. Oh, all the worst things I've ever seen for sorcerer. Right.
Yeah, it was the psionic one that specifically sucked, and then the clockwork that was...
It's weird. Yeah. The clockwork one's weird.
Yeah. They were trying something. I'll give them that.
Yeah, good job, but you could just go the super safe and boring route that people kind of want for sorcerer. Like, one, you can always make a dragon subclass for anything and people will eat that shit up. you can always make a demon class for anything and people eat that shit up.
That's true.
And I don't think we have a fiend sorcerer yet.
No, we do not.
The closest is the divine soul. But you know people would love to be able to make their soft, ooh-woo, special being demon sorcerer.
Tiefling, like, sorcerer, of course, at the same time.
Oh, of course, yeah. Like, a double tiefling. their horns, they get 4 more. Their tails, twice as long. Like...
That's really what makes a character special, is how long their tail is.
Of course, yeah. Jeez. But yeah, you know people would be all over a demon sorcerer. Even though it's easy and, like, been done, just do it to have it be done and just get out of the way.
Definitely. There's something to be said about that. Like, you know, if the people want it, just give it to them.
Yeah, there's a few subclasses that I just won't make because I feel like they should be made officially.
You're digging your feet. It's like, come on.
Yeah, I'm not going to make dragon subclass for anything because you should be making dragon subclasses.
They released a couple, right? The UAs recently. It was like a dragon monk and a dragon ranger, I think.
Mm-hmm, which validated that stance for me.
Yep.
It's like, see, I told you they're going to do it eventually.
Yeah.
Now I'm just waiting for the dragon barbarian because, oh boy.
Jeez, what could that even be?
You just turn into a dragon. That's it. Just look at me. I'm a dragon now.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I could see them actually adding on to the new beast barbarian and like making variations of that, which is not really fifth edition style to like, you know, add variations to a subclass, but I could easily see being like, here's a dragon focus. If you want to be a dragon barbarian, then instead of just getting claws, you get dragon claws or, you know, whatever.
Woo!
Yeah, like right now, if you really wanted to, if you just made like a dragonborn, like beast barbarian, you could kind of get the dragon thing going on.
You don't get...
just pretend.
Yeah, you wouldn't get like the specific resistances or breath weapons or anything like that. So it would be, it'd be most of the way there.
If you like squint at it real hard, it's a dragon barbarian.
And also yell at anybody who tells you otherwise.
No, this is my special dragon boy, Ted, the barbarian.
Ted the dragon barbarian. All right,
the dragon barbarian.
You've decided my next character.
They call me Ted.
It's full name too. No shorthand. It's just Ted. So which of your homebrew creations are your favorite right now? And I know that's probably a tough, it's like choosing between children.
So one of the ones I'm really proud of is one you've seen it, my Oath of Self Paladin.
Yes.
And I'm also very happy with my Ranger subclass, the Tomb Warden, which that one was really fun to make because I was trying to find different ways to use favored terrain, like the mechanics for it.
Right.
And the thing I found was, okay, what if the subclass just gave extra things that counted as favored terrain? And I don't know why I landed on this, but it ended up being, like, when you're in, like, graveyards, tombs, ancient ruins, anywhere you can find ghosts, it counts as your favorite terrain.
Okay. Okay, so yeah, and expanding on that idea of favorite terrain to make it actually come up.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And what was the general flavor behind this Tomb Ranger? Was it like
the general flavor was... Tomb Warden, yeah.
Yeah, Tomb Warden.
The general flavor was, so normal rangers are like, we protect civilization from nature or nature from civilization, and these guys are like, okay, what about, like, forgotten histories that have been reclaimed by nature? They're now part of nature, you know?
Okay.
So, they are all about, they're historians, they're mediums, like, Indiana Jones if you could talk to ghosts.
Right. So Laura Croft. Basically.
Oh, yeah.
Because every single one of... Yeah. So, yeah, either way. Any of those, like, you know, ruin explorers, I think, fall under that. And I like that because it does give you a, for lack of a better term, a Tomb Raider-esque character. And less from the Lara Croft style and more of just the literal words, Tomb Raider.
Yeah. But, yeah, I thought it was interesting. And then I leaned really heavy into the ghost thing once I had the idea. Because one, you can, once I realized that I was going to use ghosts, I realized you could reflavor like most ranger spells as like, yeah, ghosts help me out.
Yeah, sure.
Like Hunter's Mark is like, go haunt that guy.
Yeah. And I think you even see that flavoring with Ancestral Barbarian. Because their whole thing is that their ancestors help them out. So, yeah, that exact same flavor of just, like, I do a thing, and it's because ghosts did it.
Yeah, they... that one... Like, you could have a party of ghost-themed ones eventually. Like, that's obviously my goal. Only ghosts.
I love it. I would play in that. Say, we had a campaign recently where we had Hilda the Ancestral Barbarian... And her entire thing was she constantly had her ghost ancestors talking to her. So she'd just be seen, like, off in the corner just talking to herself. And everyone's like, what is she? And that's what she does. She's just, that's just Hilda.
And I got to playtest the Tomb Warden when someone was running Curse of Strahd. And, oh, boy.
That seems fitting.
That was just perfect.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've ever played Curse of Strahd.
I have. I didn't beat it, but I obviously know how it ends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You beat Strahd.
Yeah,
probably.
You beat Strahd.
That's my guess.
Or you don't.
Yeah, that's true. Or you don't. But the like one of when the first zone, the Death House, I think it's called.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up taking one of the ghosts there that became like my buddy for the whole campaign.
Nice.
So like I said, when I did Hunter's Mark, it was that same ghost from that house going, "All right, haunt them. Go."
Just do a quick haunt for me.
Just do a quick haunt real quick.
So that's cool. No, see, I like the idea of that, and definitely a niche of the Ranger that is currently not filled.
Mm.
Where it's like that, there's a lot of stuff that seems to be the driving out of those things. Like you could say the Monster Slayer, or is it Monster Hunter? One of those that's like a very like Van Helsing-esque character, and I could see them hunting the ghost, but I could not see them going and being like, "Hey, let's be friends. Let's like, you know, let's protect stuff together." So I like that.
I think their logic is like, yeah, they're supernatural, but they're still natural. They're just ghosts. It's whatever.
And that really is like in the same vein where you can't look at religion in the same aspect in D&D as you can in the real world. It's like you can't look at ghosts the same way. It's not this matter of like, oh, all ghosts are this or that. It's like, no, we can see ghosts. We can go talk to ghosts. They're right there.
We can take notes. Like, right. We can go to college and take Ghost 101. Like,
right. It is a story in itself. Or sorry, not a story. It's a study in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that is always like just interesting from a world building perspective is how you really like layer that in.
I worked in a country which is very comfortable with the undead in my setting. Like some places they have rats, other people they have like grandma's ghost floating through the kitchen, and they just have like a spray bottle of holy water. It's like, no, I said out, down. Every town has like the local zombie wrangler. Like it's just a living.
Yeah. No, and I think that's really interesting. Now I would wonder like what causes that area to have so many undead? Because obviously it's not like the rest of the world is, you know, got ghosts literally everywhere.
What I worked in was, so for druids, the lore I wrote for druids was, you know how for land druids, the different like mountains, plains, whatever. I try to make like a holy, like natural area for each of those.
Okay.
So for the swamp druids, I wrote something called the Dread Bog because I'm very creative and edgy. So the Dread Bog's thing is just like all unattended undead. If they're just left alone long enough, they'll just wander towards this bog and walk into the waters and vanish.
Okay, it's like how they get to the afterlife.
Yeah, it's just in universe. No one knows why.
Right.
That's how it works. But if you just leave undead alone long enough, they'll slowly wander towards this bog. And so this country's like right near it. So there's a lot of ghosts.
Okay. So it's like a nice tourist stop before they head off into the great unknown.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to lean into the ghost thing really hard. And so like their military, it's mandatory. You join it. But either you join it while you're alive for, like, 10 years, or wait till you're a ghost, and then you're mandatory to do it for, like, 50 years.
Oh. Huh.
So, like, half their military is just undead.
Right. That's horrifying, actually.
Correct! Either way, you will serve in their military, one way or the other.
Right. But could you just imagine being, like, another country going up against that?
Right.
And it's like they just have the like an army of undead, and any of the soldiers of ours that they kill will just join their military at some point here.
Oh, they never signed like the contracts. They weren't citizens, so obviously they don't have to join. Oh,
okay, fair enough.
It's a very legal thing.
Okay. Like, so there's a lot of order to it. I like that too. That's fantastic.
And of course I just made their aesthetic just like gold, because why not? Just red and gold, and I gave them this special material called necrotic gold, which it can be interacted with ghosts and enchanted with necromantic stuff pretty easily. So their army is just running around with glowy golden swords and ghosts. It's like, this scene's intimidating.
Yeah,
I'm cool with this.
Say, I'm definitely a little bit intimidated. I don't want to fight these people.
It's like, what should the theme be? I don't know. Let's make them all Greek. Sure, they're all Greek.
Yeah. Then you mentioned your other one was the Paladin, the Oath of Self.
Oath of Self. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I did read through that one. It's been a while, but go ahead. Talk about the flavor of that.
That one, I had a lot of trouble trying to figure out what to make for a Paladin, but I really wanted to make one because I made one of every other class at that point. So I was like, okay, what the hell, what kind of oath would a Paladin make that's different from the ones that already exist? And then I watched this anime called My Hero Academia.
Pretty popular, I hear.
Yeah, it's a new up and comer, I think. It's probably gonna get a lot of fans soon. Real sleeper.
Yeah. just in case anyone is not familiar with the anime, it's probably like the most popular one right now. I think Attack on Titan's a little bit more popular, but
at least in the top five.
Yeah.
And then there's this character called All Might, because I'm going to keep talking as if people listening don't know what the show is.
I don't, please do. I don't watch it. I don't watch it at all.
Okay. So there's this character called All Might, and his whole big thing is he's the number one hero. And his whole thing is, I have to be number one because having a number one means I give people hope. And by being number one, I'm taking all the responsibility on myself. Because even if I don't like it, I'm the only one that can do it.
Okay.
So I got to be the best hero I can be. In a prideful way, but also not.
Right, right.
Like, I'm the best, but I'm not saying that because I'm full of myself. It's just a fact, and I can't help it.
Right. And now I need to, like, operate within this established truth of, yeah, I'm the best.
Yeah, and I went, that sounds, one, incredibly unhealthy, and two, I would love to play that as a Paladin.
Yeah.
And that's where the Oath of Self came from.
Yeah.
So it's a character that's like, yeah, I'm gonna be a hero because who the hell else can do it?
No, that's awesome.
So it's all about hyper-focusing on being the best you can be for the sake of others, but also because you're just that cool. So it's somewhere between selfishness and selflessness. So you can write them either or as a good guy or bad guy, I think.
Right. And I do like when the flavor is so baked into the class that just I see a lot of turmoil and just confusion, not even just like for that character, but like for everybody involved, as to like what this person's goals are and everything. And I could just, that'd be a fun character to play, to say the least.
Yeah, I was really happy when I finally got it, because like I said, Paladin was so hard for me.
Yeah.
So when I finally had the idea, I'm like, yeah, let's go. And I did it in like 20 minutes, maybe, once I had it. I sat down, pumped it out, went, yeah, cool. Now I gotta playtest this shit.
Right. But the initial idea was put on paper, and that's always the hardest part.
Yeah. And then I'm actually working on a Paladin subclass right now for my next collection of subclasses called the Sin Eater, which is, I read, no, my friend told me about a thing called a Sin Eater, which is a real thing that existed way back when Catholicism was the big thing everywhere. So, the premise of a Sin Eater is when someone's dying, you place, like, a loaf of bread on their chest, ritualistically, and the bread supposedly absorbs all of their sin.
Right.
And then you paid someone to eat it, so they would take on the sin of the dying person. The dying person gets to move on to heaven, and this person's doomed to hell because they ate this person's sin.
That's why I just eat so much bread now, is I'm just preparing. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, self-sacrifice, kind of for the sake of money, but still self-sacrifice.
Right.
That sounds kind of Paladin-y.
Yeah.
So I kind of took that concept of taking sin away from people and then with it, empowering yourself with that.
That is interesting. So, man, I guess that could go a lot of different directions. Do you have anything that you can tell us mechanically how that's represented?
Mechanically, I ended up, their channel divinity is when a humanoid dies within 30 feet of them, I think it was, they go, okay, DM, with my channel divinity, one, tell me what their primary sin was in life, and then I'm going to get new oath spells based on what their sin was. And I'm going to get resistances to that school of magic.
Okay. Okay, that's nice. And then, you know, as the DM could probably just, like, if they're not an established NPC, just, like, roll on the table or whatever and and choose one.
Yeah, simple, just, like, a D8, ignore eights.
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you want to do the Seven Deadly Sins, yeah. But I'm going to do the Seven Deadly Sins because everyone knows those.
Yeah.
So those are probably the easiest to work with.
No, that's really cool. That's a great idea.
Yeah, and like I said, that's a real thing that people did. I heard that, I'm like, that is, for some reason, the most interesting thing I've read in a year. And I'm gonna... I am all about this crime loaf. Tell me more about this crime loaf.
Oh, man. Now I want, like, a story about the loaf that doesn't get eaten. And just becomes the most evil loaf of bread that's ever been.
Oh, sure. It's just sitting around being cursed, radiating evil somewhere.
Right.
It doesn't rot. It doesn't mold.
And then, like, some random passerby just, like, finds the bread and eats it.
Just some... It's like, oh shit, did you eat that? Yeah, I was hungry. Dude. Oh, shit.
5 minutes of just like, what the fuck are we gonna do now? Like,
like if your roommate was a sin eater and he just left the bread lying about, it's like, okay, is this? And you just like got it confused with the normal bread. It's like, shit. Which one's the safe loaf?
Are you eating a sin sandwich right now?
Maybe. I'm sorry, it just tastes better.
Of course it does. That's gluttony. All right. So I have one final question to wrap up this lovely discussion.
I'm sorry I've gone off tangents. That's the whole time.
Literally what the point of this is. No need to apologize.
I feel like I haven't actually answered a single question.
I don't think it's bothered me. So. and this one is pretty open. It's just, is there any anything that you want to talk about?
Ooh.
I know, right? It could be something going on in your campaign right now, maybe more of this homebrew stuff that you're working on, or, I don't know, maybe there was somebody who bullied you in third grade and you really want to just sock it to them years later.
I just want to... Gosh dang. Don, if you're listening to this, you're an asshole. let's see. Oh, so we were talking about getting to play other systems. I currently have a folder full of systems that I just desperately want to play. And one system that I've read all the way through is a fan-made Pokemon tabletop game.
Oh, man.
Which, like it or like, whether or not you're actually interested in it, it has a lot of feats that I think are really funny and for less serious campaigns should totally work them in.
Is it a rework of 5th edition or is it totally its own system?
It's similar to like it's mostly its own system, but they kept the feat system from D&D.
Okay.
Like one of the feats is literally just called, "Hey, watch this." And what it is mechanically is when you pick up this feat, you no longer gain feats, you gain points, which at any point in the game you can refund for any feat on the fly.
Oh.
So it's like, oh shit, if only we had someone who is proficient in acrobatics, you go, hey, watch this. And then you take a feat that makes you proficient in acrobatics. And... that is the funniest shit I have ever seen in a game.
Oh yeah, that could get wild. And depending on you know what feats are in that game, I'm thinking of it from a 5th edition perspective. Mm-hmm. definitely could get broken, but who cares?
Oh, I mean, yeah, that's for sure.
Obviously not for, like, a serious campaign yeah. in any way. But I just, I love the idea of that. Just like, hey, I got this. And it's just like, how do they always have what we need?
Like, how are they always able to do yeah. this?
That's...
There's another one, a feat just called I Read the Manual.
Oh, my God.
Which is, you know how to use any electronic device that would realistically have a manual. That's the feat.
Oh man.
And there's just a handful of those throughout the system that are just like, within this game, sure, but anywhere else, this could be so funny. And I sort of want to bring them over to 5th edition in like a single thing just to see how it goes.
Right. Right. That's what one-shots are for.
Yeah, one of the features is like, if you're on a main road, you can, like, once a week just have a bus happen to pass by that happens to be going where you're going.
And these do sound great for less so the standard, like, replacing an ASI feat, but I love giving my party, I'll say, feat-adjacent things that I'll just call boons.
Same. And I love giving those.
And I feel like that's, like, super fitting just to say, like, hey, you know, once a week, you can just have a feat for, like, one instance, you know?
Yeah.
Like, one round or one action that you need to complete. Like, give yourself this random ability. It's, like, a blessing by the gods yeah. or whatever.
Yeah, I want to try and give more of those, like, extra things along the vein of the ones I found in that Pokemon tabletop.
Right.
Like, oh, what was one of them? It's like, oh, one of them was like, I think it was literally just called I Know a Guy.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you need, if you're in a new town, you can say you know a contact, be like, hey, I know a guy. And of course, all of them are named what you need to say when you use them.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like the names of the feats are just like,
yeah, you know. It's like, hey, watch this.
Right.
And if you do that, then the DM knows what you're doing, and you don't have to go into the mechanics of it. You can just do it.
Yeah. That's pretty good. For the contact thing, I've seen people use inspiration for that before, where you spend your inspiration, and then you can say, like, hey, I have a contact for this. You know, so it's like, everybody, yeah. you need some information, and instead of nobody's good at history or you all failed your roles, whatever, then he's yeah. like, hey, I've got a contact who's specifically well versed in the occult, so let's go talk with them.
Yeah, I know a guy.
Yeah, exactly. I know a guy.
Yeah, that is a fun thing I do want to get more into. I also found a system called Masks the Next Generation. New Generation? Next Generation? Whatever. It's a superhero-themed one where everyone's, like, the teen heroes, okay. right? And one of the things I found super cool is that your stats are based on your self-image because you're a teenager. That changes all the time.
Yeah.
So the five main stats are just how you see yourself.
Okay.
So the system is built around you being a kid, not knowing who you are. And that is super cool.
Yeah.
I just wanted to shout out that system real quick.
No, that's really neat. I wonder how playing that as a teenager would affect you.
Right?
Or it's
boy,
like,
boy, I don't know.
Like, oh, look at all of my issues just put onto a stat block.
Right? And, like, a huge mechanic is just called shifting your labels, which is an adult character in the game will tell your character what they think you should, like, who they think you should be.
Okay.
And then you can either accept what they're putting on you or try and resist it.
Interesting.
So it's like, yeah, you can be, you're not supposed to be a superhero. You're just a normal kid. No, fuck you.
Double down on it. As most yeah. teenagers would if somebody told them that right. they should or shouldn't do something.
And then rather than having quote-unquote classes, each they're called playbooks, and each one's supposed to be like an archetype of teen hero from stuff,
right?
Like, one's the protege, so Robin, the whole thing is you have an adult figure who's like, I am like a super serious no funny business man with no powers, and you have to be the same thing.
And so the protege is all about, okay, am I going to be just like my teacher or right. be my own person?
Right.
And that's just a super cool system to relive the traumas of high school.
Yeah, without a doubt. Every morning I wake up and I just think, like, wouldn't it be great if I could relive the the horrors of high school, but at the comfort of my basement?
What if I could just do it all over right. again and just cry?
I could see it being cathartic, somewhat, you know?
It could be, yeah. And part of the system, too, is there's a thing called the moment of truth, which is basically you look at the DM and go, I'm in control for this scene, we do what I say.
Oh.
And then once it's done, you can lock one of those stats, so, like, you now have a more solid idea of who you are.
Gotcha. Okay. That, like, can't be shifted anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I have noticed that there's been a trend with a lot of these newer indie games to give more autonomy to the players.
Yes.
And I think that's just a really, it's almost hard to grasp the concept coming from standard D&D Pathfinder mentality where it's like the GM says what goes. But there is, I've seen a lot of these games that it's just like, yeah, at any point the player can just say, I'm in control in whatever capacity.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to play one yet, but I'm quite interested.
I think it was the older edition of 7th C, because I think I played this at some point. It had, like, during character creation, you basically draw tarot cards to, like, give you different boons and stuff. And one of the ones I got was, like, three times throughout the entire campaign, like, no recharging this, it's just three times during the course of this character's life, you can go, DM, I'm in charge now, this is what happens.
Oh, man, I'd blow those in, like, two sessions, guarantee it.
Right? They'd be fucking gone.
Did I use them right? It's like, you just got yourself pineapples in a non-tropical location. That's what you blew your control over? Yes.
It's like, yeah, we were stranded. We needed food. You could have had a boat show up.
Oh.
Nope, just trying to dick with the DM's world building.
But yeah, that's the one I ended up with, and I never used a single one, and I always regretted
it. Yeah,
because I was like, but what if I need it? What if I need it later?
Yeah, no, that's just like an issue with role-playing games in general. I'll just say long-term games, as you like amass these limited use items, just like you gotta use them, you just have to. It's better to just blow it and just be done with it than just sit on it until the final boss.
And there's always gonna be those things that everyone forgot exists in like your inventory. It's like, yeah, we have a lamp with a genie that we got like level 2 and just we're level 20 doing like epic level stuff now.
Right.
And we're about to go fight a god and we all forgot it's there, including the DM. And then someone's like, shit, we're dying. What do we do? Flipping through sheet. Oh.
Right. And that's where it's great.
We've all had that moment where it's like, oh shit, we have a what?
Right. Right. Like the final fight and they just go, oh my god, we've got like 16 potions that might be helpful here. Like,
right.
Why are we sitting on these?
My players have a, what is it called? They keep calling it a port-a-fort because they play Fortnite. I don't play Fortnite, but they keep going, yeah, it's a port-a-fort. It's something fortress, like the instant fortress.
Okay.
They got one really early because the loot table was generous, I guess, and I keep forgetting it's there, and then they keep threatening me with it.
Oh my god.
It's like, we can just drop it on the villain's head. We can do it.
Well, that's like, I gave my party an interdimensional ball. It's basically like a bag of holding, kind of, but it was like a puzzle ball that they unlocked. When it opened up, it like had just a couple of rooms that...
Oh, that's cool.
Long story short, was made by a collector of sorts. So like...
Okay.
Either way, I wanted it to be a little more interesting than just a bag of holding. But they still kind of use it like one. But very often, they'll be talking about like, oh well, yeah, we need to get from here to there, and that's like on the other side of the country. What if we just have the druid turn into a giant eagle and just we all go into the ball and he just flies it across? And I'm like, I guess you guys, you know, you could officially ruin travel for me. You totally could.
You could suck all the fun out of it.
So when they first brought that up, I was just like, what did I do? Like, why didn't I think of that? You know? But since then I've explained, like, you're more than welcome to, that is perfectly mm-hmm. within your realm, but keep in mind, I will still roll for random encounters in the sky, and if the druid gets knocked out of eagle form, you guys are going to be separated, and it'll be this whole ordeal.
Yeah.
So, like, you know. But...
Oh, yeah, because if the eagle drops it, and they fall in two different places.
Exactly.
And so side quest time.
Yeah. And so when they first brought it up, though, I was just like totally stunned. I was like, I've got nothing. Can you guys please not do that? Like, I just asked them. I was like, I need you to not do that, because I can't think of a way around it right now. It's a very valid thing, but I'm sorry. Please don't. I've got so much cool stuff prepared. Please, you want to experience it.
Tip to DMs: it's always okay to just go, hey guys, I have no idea how to handle that.
Yeah.
Let's not.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. Like, I am all for giving players autonomy and letting them do mm-hmm. literally anything they want. But there have definitely been a couple of times where I'm like, guys, if you just give me like a week to think about this,
yeah,
I will make something
yeah.
cool. If you try and just do it right now, I'm just going to fumble through it. And I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, it is totally fine to acknowledge, like, hey, I'm only human, and I have not planned for literally everything
right.
you come up with. So either we do it, and it's not nearly as cool as it could be, or you just hold off
right.
for a little bit.
Yeah. And I...
When I've done, it's like, that is totally a fine idea. I'm not prepared for it. Give me, like, 15 minutes to write something.
Yeah.
You guys just talk amongst yourselves, and I'll come up with something. That's also completely viable.
Yeah, 100%. See, I haven't had to do that too often, only because I feel bad with the limited amount of time we have per week, just being like, let's take 15 minutes to just, like, grind things to a halt. So
that's fair.
But it's still a perfectly valid option. I try to avoid that. The only two times it's happened, I've been like, let's just do another thing first, and we'll come back to that one next week, all right? Like, I just want you guys to change
yeah.
your order of importance on these two issues.
Yeah, I stumped my DM with an idea, and he's like, holy shit, give me, like, 10 minutes to read the rules on this weird interaction we created? Because at the start of this, I mentioned, like, in 5th edition, you could be like, hey, DM, can I have this familiar fly a bomb in this thing's mouth?
Right.
It's kind of what I did, but it wasn't a bomb. It was, like... from what the DM explained, it was like two liquids. When you pour them together, you kind of make like an interdimensional space, like a bag of holding or something.
Neat.
But it's like pulls things in.
Oh.
So I had the familiar fly into this thing's mouth, mix the liquids.
Oh no! Oh no! Man, that would be great. I might make that. That seems really useful, because you could just like pour one concoction of it into like a drink, and then
yeah.
10 minutes later you give somebody the other part of it and they drink it
mm-hmm.
and boom, you've got a delayed reaction stomach explosion
yeah.
implosion really.
And like the monster had like some kind of magic crystal on his back.
Oh my god, making it
and,
worse
like,
yeah.
it was, and he was like, I genuinely have to like figure out how all this interacts. I'll get back to you. And so we were just sitting there like, what the fuck did we do?
Right.
What have we created? By the way, I lost that familiar.
Shocker.
Like, by loss, I mean, it didn't do the dies, and I can resummon it for 10 gold. It's straight up gone. I got a new familiar.
Oh my gosh. So what?
So we're assuming it's lost in some, like, void of space somewhere, and it can't summon it.
Yeah, just, like, floating.
Yeah, we're assuming one day down the line, we're going to end up in this zone, and we're going to find that poor, poor eagle who's been in, like, pitch blackness for a year. You left me here.
Oh, my God. So what did happen to the person, then, who had this concoction
in front
of them?
There's a big crater where it was.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It was supposed to be, like, a big, like, army versus army fight. And they had, like, a giant, like, zombie undead thing. And so I was like, I don't want to fight that,
no.
dude. Hey, you still have that concoction, right?
Okay. All right. That's good. So you're...
We killed some of our own army doing that, but my character didn't care. He's like, hey.
Results.
That thing's gone.
And, you know, if the fight was going to happen and they were going to lose, you know, let's say 500 people, and in this way they only lost 100, then it's just pure numbers.
It's exactly how he justified it to himself.
It's so easy to do that in a tabletop game. But in real life, I'd still call you a psycho.
for sure.
Socio, whatever. I don't know. But
in real life, what the fuck,
right,
dude?
Right. That's awesome. All right. Well, let's go ahead and cap it there. Before we leave, is there anything that you want to promote? I know you've said you've been working on some stuff. Anything you're releasing soon or what?
I'm hoping to launch my Patreon soon.
Okay.
That'll be cool. Yeah.
Where can people find you?
Oh, they can find me at Call Me They on Twitter. My name is Lex Olden there, like I was introduced here. Currently, it's also Lex Olden Crime Loaf, because I was just so into the Sin Eater. Like, when I started it, like, a month ago, it was like, for the next 2 days, I wish to only be referred to as Crime Loaf. Thank you.
I might continue that trend. You are now Crime Loaf to me. Does perfect.
And I'm cool with that, you know?
I have accepted my life as Crime Loaf. Now I want that as one of the, like, the gender choices, like male, female, other, right. Just Crime Loaf.
Crime Loaf. My pronouns are loaf, and loaf. Thank you.
Perfect. Well then, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a blast, and thanks for being my first guest on this adventure.
Thank you for having me as your first guest. It is so fun just to blather on about tabletop.
Yeah, for sure. And that's exactly what I wanted to do. So, success. Woohoo!
Yeah.
To all listeners, again, check out Lex's work, some really fun homebrews, and for our promotional minute, you know, as usual, if you aren't yet, make sure to follow us on whatever social media you can, and to do our quick little plug, we have our dice affiliate, Metallic Dice Games, and right now, and always, you can get 10% off your dice order. Using the code MM10, check out their stuff. Just fantastic dice. And yeah, thanks for listening. I don't have Kevin here to say it, so it feels weird. So he usually does the thanks for listening, but I guess that's on me now. All right, we're going to end it there.